This week on Vaticano, delve into the Church's teachings on marriage, divorce, remarriage, and what truly makes a union valid. Join us as we speak with Cardinal Kurt Koch, President of the Dicastery for Promoting Christian Unity, and discover the story behind the Holy Lance, believed to have pierced Jesus' side during the crucifixion. Vaticano starts now. The Synod on Synodality continues. From his hospital bed, Pope Francis approved a special ecclesial assembly for October of 2028. In a letter to bishops worldwide, Cardinal Mario Grech, Secretary General of the Synod of Bishops, revealed the plan to evaluate how Catholic communities around the world have implemented the recently concluded Synod on Synodality recommendations. Cardinal Grech also emphasized that this gathering will not constitute a new synod, but rather serve as the culmination of a structured 3-year implementation process.
It is a document.
After the conclusion of the Synod on Synodality in 2024, Cardinal Grech told Vaticano that the Synod will go on.
So the Synod is concluded, but there are still working groups, ongoing working groups that I believe...
I'm not sure whether it's concluded.
You're not sure whether it's concluded. So this would be my other question.
It is not a Synod with a document that we can put on the shelf. It is something dynamic. That's why I ask, is it concluded? Because if it is dynamic, it goes on.
Following the conclusion of the Synod in October of 2024, Pope Francis approved the Synod's final document, accepting it as church teaching. In May, Cardinal Grech's office will publish guidelines for the preparation towards the 2028 assembly. In October, later this year, there will be a special jubilee of synodal teams. Throughout 2027, evaluation assemblies will take place at diocesan, national, and international levels, with continental gatherings scheduled for early 2028. Grech highlighted the essential role of local synodal teams, composed of priests, deacons, consecrated men and women, and lay people, working alongside their bishops. The goal is to help churches walk in a synodal style, Grech wrote. For one day every year, churches across the world remain open for 24 hours, inviting everyone to pray in front of the Blessed Sacrament and encounter Jesus through confession. This is 24 hours for the Lord, a time when hearts burdened by sin find renewal and the faithful meet Jesus face to face in prayer before the Blessed Sacrament. But where did it all begin? It all began in Rome, near St. Peter's Square, at the Centro San Lorenzo, where Daniele Venturi helped spark what would become a global movement. Daniele Venturi, who sadly passed away just days ago, described that night 12 years ago.
One of the most significant nights that ignited this Eucharistic spark was during the period between the resignation of Benedict XVI and the beginning of Pope Francis' pontificate. We were right here, inside this very church where we find ourselves today, engaged in intense prayer that lasts several days, 24 hours a day, day and night.
Annuncio vobis gaudium magnum, habemus papam.
On March the 13th, 2013, as the world waited to hear the name of the new pope, a group of young people continued to pray before the Eucharist. 24 hours of adoration, asking God to guide the church. Months later, they gathered again, this time to celebrate the birthday of the newly elected Pope Francis. They called it 24 Hours for the Lord. And to their amazement, Pope Francis heard about it. The very next day, he sent them a message of thanks. He sent them his greetings, his gratitude, and rosaries. And then, one year later, he gave them something even greater. In 2014, Pope Francis instituted 24 Hours for the Lord for the entire church. And from that spark, a global movement was born. But the Centro San Lorenzo never stopped. To this day, it remains a place of adoration, prayer, and mission. Fabiola Insunza, head of the center, explains.
The adoration of the Holy Sacrament is the center of the center, is the heart of the center, because it is there where everything is born.
And Pope Francis didn't just proclaim it, he lived it. Every year, he attended, prayed, heard confessions, and went to confession himself. This year, however, something is different. Due to illness, Pope Francis cannot be here. But the mercy of God cannot be stopped.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. The Vatican has released the first photo of Pope Francis since he entered Gemelli Hospital in Rome on February the 14th. In the photo, the Holy Father can be seen seated before the altar of the chapel where he concelebrated the Eucharist. The Vatican also reported that the Pope's condition remains stable and that he is continuing with the prescribed treatment. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has provided the Vatican with a list of names of Ukrainians detained by the Russian military. The president officially asked for diplomatic mediation to secure their release and indicated that he had a telephone conversation with Cardinal Pietro Parolin, the Holy See's Secretary of State. He also expressed his gratitude for the prayers for Ukraine and for peace. Over 30,000 athletes held 42 seconds of silence for Pope Francis before the start of the Rome Marathon last weekend. The silence, 42 seconds for the 42 kilometers in a marathon, is a sign of closeness towards the ailing 88-year-old Pope. More than 30,000 people from 126 countries have registered for the March 16 race that started close to the Colosseum. Pope Francis prayed for victims of a nightclub fire that left at least 59 people dead and an additional 155 injured in the town of Kochani in North Macedonia. In his telegram addressed to the country's bishop Kiro Stoyanov of Skopje, the pontiff assured remembrance and prayer for those who lost their lives while invoking heavenly comfort for those who suffer the consequences of such a harsh trial. The deadly blaze broke out when indoor fireworks were lit during a concert. Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew I of Constantinople said that the tensions between the Catholic and the Orthodox Church are not insurmountable. Talking to a pilgrimage group from the German Association of the Holy Land, the honorary head of Worldwide Orthodoxy underlined that he is full of hope to resolve those tensions, and I quote, in a few years. This year, the Orthodox and Catholic Christians will celebrate Easter on the same date, truly a sign of hope for Christian unity. To learn more about this also in our second feature interview with Cardinal Koch. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates in Rome. Andreas Tonhauser for EWTN Vaticano.
In just a few moments, learn about the Church's view on the beauty of marriage.
Todos soñamos con una familia linda, perfecta, pero no existen las familias perfectas.
In his prayer intention for the month of March 2025, Pope Francis called for prayers for all families in crisis. The Catholic Church has always been an advocate of the sanctity of marriage and family. Pope John Paul II's theology of the body has provided a strong tool and ideal that still guides many people today. And yet some people fail to live up to this ideal.
My ex-husband and I had celebrated our 20th anniversary a few months before he walked out. We'd been married for 20 years. We both had good careers. I had actually stopped working as a lawyer to raise our two children. And I would say basically we had achieved the American dream. And then unexpectedly one day, right before Christmas, he walked out.
Divorce was out of the question for Beverly. She fought for her marriage in court, also for the sake of her children. But after years of fighting, her husband finally got the divorce through. Later, she wrote a book about her struggle.
And I don't think until I converted to Catholicism that I really understood what it means to share that burden, what it means to cast that burden on the Lord. It really didn't understand. So part of my healing and everything really was by becoming Catholic, understanding marriage better, and really deepening my relationship with God, and turning things over to God.
According to Catholic teaching, a marriage cannot be dissolved. A divorce, as in secular law, does not exist in the church. But if a marriage was not validly contracted, the ecclesiastical court in Rome can pronounce an annulment.
Valid marriage is a marriage where...
Monsignor Marcus Graulich has been working at the Roman Rota for years. He's also the undersecretary of the Dicastery for Legislative Texts and says the church has clear criteria for determining whether a marriage is valid by canon law.
If I want to marry someone, I have to accept him or her. I have to agree that this marriage is forever, not for a certain time. I have to exclude divorce. I have to accept that marriage has to be open to children. I have to accept that marriage is a union between one man and one woman. That's the fidelity that marriage brings with it. And I have to be able to understand what I promise, the capacity to understand that, and the capacity to take over the burdens that marriage brings with it. And if one of these things lacks, if I exclude children, if I exclude indissolubility, if I exclude fidelity, or if I am not able to marry, to give the consent, or if I'm forced to marry, then the marriage is invalid, for the consent is not established in a valid way.
In 2015, Pope Francis expedited the annulment process. But for valid marriages, divorce and so-called remarriage are not allowed under church law. Sometimes, however, at least a separation may be advisable.
That there are cases in which separation is inevitable. At times, it becomes even morally necessary, precisely when it is a matter of removing the weaker spouse or young children from the gravest wounds caused by abuse and violence, by humiliation and exploitation, by disregard and indifference.
Dall'estraneità e dall'indifferenza.
In his speeches, Pope Francis repeatedly warned parents not to take their children hostage in the event of divorce. Daniel Miola is the founder of Life-Giving Wounds, a Catholic ministry to adult children of divorce or separation. His parents separated when he was 11 years old and eventually divorced.
This deeply impacted me, actually really devastated me. I would say still to this day, the greatest suffering that I've ever had to face. And it impacted my identity. There was a lot of shame, not just being from a divorced home, but just the betrayal and abandonment I felt.
After pastorally accompanying over 2,000 people, Daniel and his team have identified 7 wounds that most children and adult children of divorce tend to deal with.
The 7 things that they struggle with is 1, the ability to grieve because it's been normalized. 2, their identity and their faith. They often have a lot of faith struggles and understanding who they are. Okay, I'm the fruit of these 2 parents, but now they are no longer together. What does that make for me? And having to navigate these 2 homes. They struggle in relationships, love, and marriage. You know, we're less likely to marry at all. We're less likely to succeed in marriage. We struggle in our emotional life with anger, anxiety, depression. That's 4. 5, we struggle with forgiveness. 6 is family boundaries with the dysfunction. And then 7 is what I would just say, like, we struggle to, like, know how to suffer well.
After all these years at the ecclesiastical court in Rome, Monsignor Marcus Graulich finds it worrying that nowadays many couples give up too quickly instead of fighting for their marriages. He's convinced that with some effort, many divorces could be avoided.
Some years ago, I read the, I don't know if it was an interview or the autobiography of Cardinal Dolan. And he talks about his parents in St. Louis. And he said, when Pa came home from work, we all had to leave the kitchen. They grabbed a beer and talked. Now, that's a good form of preventing. You can also have a tea. You don't necessarily need to have a beer. But come home, talk.
In the meantime, Pope Francis reminds the faithful that families in crisis are not alone.
Oremos para que las familias divididas encuentren en el perdón la curación de sus heridas, redescubriendo, incluso en sus diferencias, las riquezas de cada uno.
The dialogue between the Catholic Church and other ecclesial communities is not always easy. For 15 years, Cardinal Kurt Koch has tried to walk the thin line between openness and clarity. The prefect of the Dicastery for Promoting Christian Unity has served the Church as ecumenical minister since 2010. In an interview with EWTN Vaticano reporter Rudolf Gehrig, the Cardinal looks back on his life and offers intimate insights into his personal struggle with God.
Who was the first person ever to tell you about God?
My family, especially on feast days, on Christmas, on Easter. During those days, the dimension of the divine was very present.
Did you grow up Catholic, so did your parents tell you about God?
My parents were Catholic. Although they weren't always particularly devout, it was a great challenge for me to get to know the faith in this situation. I learned a lot from my brother, who is 7 years older than I. He was very involved in the church.
When you were a child, how did you imagine God back then? How did he look like for you?
I did not imagine him to be an old man with a beard, but it was always clear to me that he is a loving person and he wants to be in a relationship with us and he loves us. He only wants the best for us. He is one who embodies the good and wills the good. As a kid, I found there were similarities between Saint Nicholas and God.
Did this image of God change when you became a priest, when you became a bishop, then a cardinal?
Of course, my relationship with God changed, because it then becomes very clear that God makes himself so small that he can meet us. That is a magnificent miracle. And that, of course, deepens our image of God once again. He is then not simply the one who sits enthroned beyond the world and just watches us, but who is truly a loving, compassionate God who cares for people.
Have you ever doubted your vocation or even God?
To me, my calling was always clear. This is the goal. This is what I want to become. I actually had just a few doubts about God himself. At most, I doubted that God might possibly have doubts about me and my situation. I always keep asking myself the question, how can you believe in God when there is so much misery and suffering in the world? But I have become more and more convinced that you can only endure this suffering in the world if you believe in God, because he himself did not stay away from suffering. But in his Son, he took suffering upon himself and showed how you can endure it through faith.
You have now worked under Pope Francis for almost 12 years. What is Pope Francis like as a boss?
Wie ist Papst Franziskus so als Chef?
Zunächst einmal muss ich sagen, dass er einem eine große Freiheit.
He gives you a great deal of freedom. He immediately approves all of the projects you initiate. I have never had a project where he said, no, we won't do that. Rather, when you present it to him, there is usually one word, avanti, forward.
Gibt es meistens ein Wort, avanti, vorwärts.
At the very end, I would also like to come back to your motto, to your bishop's coat of arms, that in all things Christ himself might be preeminent.
Wir leben in der heutigen Kirche.
In today's church, we have tendencies where everyone thinks they can reshape the church as they wish, and we must again be accountable for the fact that it is not our church, but his church, and that we are at his service. The Church Fathers had a beautiful image for this. Christ is the sun, the Church is the moon. And the moon cannot come up with the idea of wanting to be the sun itself. It has no other light than the light from the sun, namely, from Christ.
We'll be back after a short break with more on Vaticano. Unique rite takes place in St. Peter's Basilica on the Saturday of the first week of Lent, the exposition of the Holy Lance of St. Longinus. St. Peter's is the station church for this day in Lent. The Pontifical Academy Cultorum Martyrum Romanum is responsible for maintaining these traditions, honoring the martyrs throughout Rome.
Già dal titolo capiamo che il focus è...
From the title itself, we understand that the focus is to honor and study the martyrs. And this is the reason why, in the period of Lent, significantly for Rome, founded on the martyrs, we see that a 40-day lengthened journey that leads us to Easter is precisely a journey from church to church, and each time encountering, focusing our attention on the martyrs both of Rome and also outside Rome.
Sia di Roma, sia anche di fuori Roma.
On this day in Lent, we have the Gospel reading of the Transfiguration, where we have Peter, James, and John standing before Christ in glory, Moses and Elijah at the side showing that Christ is fulfilling the old law. He is the new law himself. And Peter, James, and John, St. John Chrysostom tells us that this scene for them was a strengthening in their belief in Christ's divinity so that they could go through the days of the Passion that were coming with strength and with belief. And so today also we hear something very interesting. We hear the words of St. Peter alone. He's the only one who speaks. He says, Lord, it's good for us to be here.
The millions of pilgrims who pass through the doors of St. Peter's Basilica each year come across a powerful 5-meter statue carved by Gian Lorenzo Bernini of a man holding a long lance, a lance that popular and mystic culture names the Spear of Destiny. This man is immediately identifiable as the soldier who pierced Christ's side, recounted by St. John's eyewitness testimony.
So many pilgrims come into St. Peter's and they walk around and they don't know that inside a hidden little chapel is this special relic, which is the tip of the spear which pierced the side of Christ. And we call it the relic of St. Longinus, the soldier who pierced the side of Christ. And so on this day, in this special rite, it's brought out for the veneration by the faithful, by the priest present, to begin again these days of Lent in a way to orient us to the Passion of Christ and to his resurrection.
This very relic, safeguarded in St. Peter's Basilica since 1492, takes center stage during a liturgical ceremony at the start of the Lenten penitential season at the heart of the church.
È un rito tradizionale con...
It is a traditional rite with oftentimes the use of the first Eucharistic prayer, or Roman canon, and therefore with the invocation of the most significant martyrs saints. In this case, for St. Peter, we move towards the canopy of St. Longinus, where the designated canons proceed to the blessing with the significant relic, which is the tip of the lance. And with this rite, the blessing is accompanied by a distinctive hymn, the Vexilla Regis, an ancient yet profoundly stirring chant, rich with emotion.
Molto antico, ma anche molto vibrante di emozione.
In a special way in St. Peter's, the faithful are guided to meditate upon the moment in which St. Longinus pierced the side of Christ.
We too, as pilgrims on this day, we come to the tomb of St. Peter, and we're able to say, St. Peter, you're here. We come and visit this lance of St. Longinus, which pierced the side of Christ. And we're already preparing ourselves for the Holy Triduum, for Good Friday, because this liturgy puts us already at the foot of the cross in anticipation. And we get to say with St. Peter, it's good for us to be here.